The Gateway brings you the day's news from the St. Louis region and across Missouri. It also includes stories from the Illinois side of the river and our Metro East reporter, Will Bauer.
In Alton, in Belleville, in East St. Louis, in Edwardsville, in Cahokia Heights, at Scott Air Force Base, I'm Will Bauer, St. Louis Public Radio.
Listen to reports from Will and all of our journalists weekdays on The Gateway, on the STLPR app, and wherever you get podcasts.
As the midterm elections get closer, the race for Missouri's 2nd Congressional District is heating up. Many political prognosticators believe that Democrats have a good chance of retaking the House this year. And if they do, the party may gain the most ground in places like Congresswoman Ann Wagner's 2nd District, which takes in a big portion of the St. Louis suburbs. Wagner contends she's well-positioned to fend off a potential blue wave. She joins us on another edition of Politically Speaking to talk about her race against Democrat Cort Van Ostrand. Let's hit the music.
This is the Politically Speaking podcast, a candid conversation with the Show Me State's biggest political newsmakers.
I'm Jason Rosenbaum.
And I'm Joe Manish.
Elections should be about your accomplishments. What have you done to qualify you for the position, and why are you qualified to run?
I'm going to push back on these regulators.
I'm doing this for the people.
I was encouraged along the way, not just by my family, but by a lot of teachers and professors, and knew when I was in college that I would run for office someday.
We're very excited about the prospect of having some more free market solutions.
Even though after the conversation, I still might not agree.
We want our listeners to get a real sense of what drives these people.
They're actually people with a story to tell.
Thank you for listening to this podcast, brought to you by Lufuse Alfa Romeo, offering test drives of the Alfa Romeo Giulia, the 2018 Motor Trend Car of the Year at Lufuse Alfa Romeo in Fairview Heights.
And welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm your host, Jason Rosenbaum, a reporter with St. Louis Public Radio. Joining me in beautiful South St. Louis County, Missouri,
this is Joe Manis.
And our guest today
is Ann Wagner, a congresswoman from Missouri's 2nd District.
This is the first time I think we've done a show, politically speaking, in South St. Louis County, Joe. We're always breaking new ground on this show.
I guess we are. I've been here a couple times. Actually, this particular operation, Republican operation in South County, A, the RNC is involved down here. B, Governor Mike Parson was here just a couple months ago.
That's right.
Did a big event here. So this has become a hotbed of Republican activity.
So
we have about four of these locations that are jointly funded and staffed by the Missouri Republican Party and the Republican National Committee, because Missouri's important this year, and it's going very well. There are about 15 across the state, but four that actually touch Missouri's 2nd Congressional District.
Yeah, in fact, that's what I was going to ask you, because I've been at the one which is off Manchester.
There's one in West County. There's one here in South County on Merrimack Bottoms. There's one in Imperial in Jefferson County, and then one in St. Charles. So three are technically in the district, but all four service the 2nd District and beyond. So, and these are a lot of young people and a lot of our volunteers, of both old and new, a lot of school kids that are working on some of their service hours are coming out. We've hit over 200, my campaign alone with this groups and this infrastructure that they've invested in, have now made over 234,000 voter contacts. That is the new number where we are. 234,000, and that's both phone calls, doors knocked, postcards sent out. I just gave a rally and motivated the troops the best I could, telling them that it's go time. We're 3 weeks out, and it's time to a lot of, most people have made up their minds, and we need to make sure that we keep that intensity up and get voters to the polls.
Yeah, some people have been telling me on both sides, like within the last week, that this is basically a base election. I mean, how some see it, that it's not so much about attracting new voters at this point. It's all about getting your base out. I mean, is that how you see that?
Well, in a district like the 2nd District, it can be both. I give a lot of crossover voters, I will tell you. We are a pretty independent voter in Missouri, where people will zigzag across the ticket and what I call the ticket splitters. So I count on independents to vote for me, even those that are lean Democrats to vote on me. This is a district that is heavy with suburban women, fairly highly educated and fairly affluent. In general, and we get a lot of crossover votes. So We know who our voters are, though, and it's our job to turn them out, and along with the base, which both bases are, in fact, very motivated.
Now, to give our listeners like a 60-second summary of your life. Well, I mean, just so that people have a sense of where you come from, even though Jason and I obviously know your history, but I think it'd be good to hear people hear it in your own
words.
Well,
this district is home to me. It's personal. People hear me say that all the time. Born and raised here. Raised my own family here.
Been married. Your parents ran a furniture.
My parents had a small little business, a carpet business. I worked in their two stores from the age of 12 on. That's kind of where I learned the overreach of government. My father used to pound the table saying all he wanted was a government off his back and out of his way so he could provide goods and service, take care of his family, provide for his employees. He'd love this new tax cut and jobs plan that we put forward that allows people in Missouri 2nd District to keep about $3,700 more of their hard-earned money, and he also would like the regulatory reform we've been able to get done in this 115th Congress. But I went on. I've raised my family here, three kids. My husband and I have been married 31 years. We live in this district. We work in this district. We go to church in this district, and we volunteer in this district. The St. Louis metropolitan area is home, and we can answer the where'd you go to high school question.
I was just going to ask you where.
Koryezu Academy. Okay.
So, you know, this is, what, your third time running for this seat or fourth time?
This will be my fourth. I've served now for almost 6 years.
You were elected in 2012.
I'm running for my fourth re-election. It's a privilege to represent this district, and that is my home. This, for me, is a calling. It's not a job. And to have the opportunity to go and to work for the people of the 2nd District in Washington, D.C. is one of my highest honors. I believe that there is still work to be done and that we are getting results for my constituents and for the American people, and I'm anxious to move ahead.
What do you see as your key achievements, particularly in this last couple years?
Well, you know, I serve on the Financial Services Committee, and I have a subcommittee gavel there, and I'd say some of the banking reforms that we have done that are very Main Street, not Wall Street, the regulatory reform, allowing people to save for their retirement future is very, very important to me. The work that I have done on human trafficking is what I'm probably most notable. We had FOSTA, the passed and the president signed in April, the Fight Online Sex Trafficking Act. I was at the White House again yesterday when the president talked about this landmark legislation and the impact that it's had in shutting down about 80% of the online commercial sex advertising that's out there. We took down Backpage.com and all of the others. As we watched human trafficking move from the streets to the internet, the whole business model has changed. $150 billion business. So that's why big tech and others fought me the whole time across the way for 6 years. But we got a major piece of legislation through with a huge criminal deterrent, a civil deterrent that will give victims and survivors restitution. And then we actually went in and were able to amend the Communications Decency Act to make it clear that Congress never intended for the internet to be a red light district. So that is a major accomplishment that we've gotten done that I believe will save lives.
In 2016, you made some headlines after the Access Hollywood tape came out where you disavowed yourself, at least temporarily, with then-candidate Trump. You've obviously worked very well with President Trump on a host of issues. What has changed between 2016 and 2018, and what allowed you to work with him even after those, what I would say everybody agrees, those very disturbing comments came out?
You know, I'm an independent thinker. I'm a principled person and I'm my own person. And when I disagree with somebody, I make that clear. But I'm very pleased with the direction that this administration has taken. And I think most of my constituents are pleased with the president's policies. We've seen results. We've got economic growth that's well above the Obama era of when we were told the new norm was going to be anywhere from 1 to 2%. We're well above 4% in economic growth, full employment, consumer confidence high, manufacturing jobs coming back. We're negotiating trade deals that are coming together. I have disagreed with the president on some of his trades and tariff approach.
Yeah, in fact, I was going to ask you about that because of tariffs.
I have, and I worry about our farmers. I'm worried about the cost and the price of soybeans and some of the aluminum and steel tariffs that are affecting our beverage and food can industry. What the multiplier effect, how sustained we can make that will be on the consumer down the road. I'm glad that we got the new NAFTA, which is now called the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Agreement, USMCA. We'll all have to get used to that.
I don't think you can really use it. NAFTA rolls off the tongue. That one really doesn't, but continue.
I know. It's USMCA, but I thought...
Although there isn't a lot of difference between the two.
Well, I got some pretty strong provisions in there for human trafficking and human rights also, which we were lauded for. I met with Lightsinger this past week also, or Lighthizer, pardon me, the U.S. trade rep, who talked about the Wagner language that we put in the new NAFTA that is going to inform Mexico and Canada as we move forward. I think there's we're making some positive progress there. I think China is the big culprit. We want free and fair trade, but we also have to be careful about the gentle balance between those that our farming community, our manufacturing community, and their needs to export.
There's no question that this race, your Democratic opponent has more money and is probably more competitive than your other Democratic opponents. And one of the things that Cort Van Ostrand is really attacking you on television about is health care. I think particularly he is taking aim at the fact that you voted for legislation in 2017 that would substantially roll back the Affordable Care Act and is basically arguing you voted to get rid of all these great healthcare protections. I want to give you the opportunity to respond to that because I feel like we're going to be seeing that argument a lot, and sure, you should definitely get your say in.
Well, I appreciate that, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak and to clarify my record. And yes, my opponent is very well-funded, but well-funded by coastal liberal elites that are sending money through an organization called Act Blue. The money's not coming from Missouri or the district. The money that my opponent is raising is coming from law firms. He's an attorney. He was an attorney in Kansas City before he moved here a couple years ago, and an attorney now here in St. Louis. And Act Blue has been sending him hundreds of thousands of dollars. We've seen this across the country, and in the Senate races too, where some are raising millions of dollars. But he's putting it up on TV and talking about health care, which is something that is of great concern for all of us. Our current system through the ACA is unaffordable. It's unworkable. We need something that's patient-centered. And
well, what specifically would you do?
Well, I will tell you, and I want to be very clear about pre-existing conditions, because protecting people with pre-existing conditions is just one of my very top priorities, and it has been since the very day that I came to Congress, and I have worked on and been an original co-sponsor on legislation like the Pre-Existing Conditions Prevention Act. And this was back in February of 2017, and it specifically maintains the protections in the ACA for people with pre-existing conditions. Two things that were positive in the Affordable Care Act for me were people with pre-existing conditions. They should have full coverage. They should be able to take that with them. And if parents want to allow their kids to stay on their health care to the age of 26, I think that was a great idea too. But insurance companies and the work that we did when we repealed Obamacare, it made it clear that insurance companies were prohibited from denying or not renewing coverage for pre-existing conditions, period. They are banned from rescinding coverage based on pre-existing conditions, period. And insurance companies are banned from excluding benefits based on pre-existing conditions,
Well, most period. Most of the bills, though, that the Republicans have advanced that have really either gotten through a chamber or have gotten a serious vote on the Senate floor have, while they have required coverage for people with pre-existing conditions, did not cover the pre-existing condition. I mean, how would you deal with that?
Well, as I said, the legislation that I have supported, and there are two probably key landmark ones that I'm going to fight to make sure that we get through, is this Pre-Existing Conditions Protection Act that specifically will cover the pre-existing condition.
Has it gone through the House
with
yet?
The people, through the House, not the Senate. And then also a new piece of legislation that I think is a new concept and idea that will actually put your right to have your pre-existing condition covered in your HIPAA rights. So I have signed on to that legislation, and I'm working on this. I think this is settled. We all know people in our lives. We have family members. I have family members that have suffered from breast cancer and prostate cancer, Crohn's disease, type 1 diabetes. This is everyone we know, friends, neighbors, family, have pre-existing conditions. Those should be covered and be able to go with them when they change their health care or change their job. Remember that the majority of, when it comes to healthcare, the majority of my constituents here in the 2nd District, 77% in fact, receive their healthcare privately through their employer, their employer-based healthcare. And there are things that we're doing through association healthcare plans, HSAs, that are trying to bring down the cost of healthcare so that that private insurance provider is cost is lower. So it's our job to try and work to put this back in the free market, take it out of the government's hand. My opponent and most of the Democrats running now want this, quote, Medicare for all, which is really just socialist, federally run healthcare, single payer healthcare for all. And what that really means is Medicare for none. And it will take away everyone's health care. If you're the 77% of people that get your health care in the 2nd District through your employer, you will lose your health care if you like it, because you will be going to a government-run, not patient-centered health care system that, and like I said, I don't care what you give the federal government, they're going to mess it up, just like they did Obamacare. So
now they've been contending that actually the idea was to make it an option rather than mandatory, that in other words, if you didn't have health care through your job, you were a part of the 23%, that you could then purchase it through Medicare. I mean, that's what they're saying, what they're proposing.
Well,
what's your thoughts about that?
Well, it costs $32 trillion. So I don't know. They can't afford to do it. Not only is it a bad idea to have the federal government in charge of our health care again, we're trying to unwind that system that has brought us down and raised costs up so high over the last 8 to 10 years. It's a bad, bad idea. It's going to take away people's current Medicare, their current veterans healthcare, their private employer-based healthcare, all of that will be taken away. And I don't know how much you'll have to raise taxes in order to cover a $32 trillion tab for this. So it's a real socialist idea. I don't know why or how it's caught such fever. We've been, people have disliked Obamacare for so long, and we worked so hard to try and give our constituents more choice, lower costs, more access to, as I said, patient-centered health care. So I'm going to continue to fight for that, but I'm going to make sure that my constituents' pre-existing conditions are covered.
So what about the 23% who don't get it through their employer, who maybe need to go through the free market? I mean, because basically what the proposals would be, wouldn't they get rid of the market?
No, what we've got are the proposal, the way things are in the 2nd District right now, 77% get it through their employer. About 14% receive their health care in the 2nd District through Medicare. We have a very small Medicaid group, and less than 4% receive their insurance on an Obamacare ACA exchange. So, you know, certainly what we are wanting to do is to move those people into affordable health care and health coverage. I mean, we should have Medicaid and Medicare safety nets for those who need them. But we ought to be able to move them into the private sector with association health care plans, catastrophic care programs. That's what I'm hoping for. I mean, right now we didn't pass this through the Senate, so what we have still stands. But I'm, as it affects this district, it's a very small percentage.
A couple of other things when we talked with your opponent that I also want to talk about. He is a proponent of restricting some firearms restrictions. He has said that you haven't been outspoken enough whenever there's been a school shooting. What would be your response to that, and what would be your general thought on restricting firearms?
I'm a mother. I'm a grandmother. We have large school districts, and in this 2nd congressional district, I care deeply about coming up with solutions that are going to keep our children and our communities and families safe. I am a staunch defender of the Second Amendment. I'm a proponent of gun safety, and I believe in these state-approved training courses that need to be taken if you're going to have a conceal and carry. I've taken them. Everybody.
Although it's not required in Missouri anymore.
But I am a strong proponent of it, and I believe that if you're going to carry a gun, you should be properly trained to carry a gun. And doing it. You know, I recognize that the shootings across the country have been absolutely tragic and awful and horrific to watch. We took action in Congress, and I've been very vocal about the action that we've taken, about how current background checks have system, it must be improved. And we voted for, and I supported, the Fix NICS Act, which was in fact signed into law by the president, that will address our background check system, along with, I supported and voted for the Stop School Violence Act, which is going to give grants, which was also signed, give grants and more security resources to our school districts. And I implored DESE, went straight to the Department of Education, Secondary Education, of elementary and secondary education, and told them to apply for these grants. It will give them technology that includes metal detectors, lighting, locks, security features, all sorts of things. We put $2.3 billion of funding into keeping our schools and communities and our kids safe.
Would you advocate arming teachers or other school personnel?
That's up to the local school districts. It depends on where you live and what's best. To me, federal government should, while we can provide resources and do some things on in a big scale in terms of the big background check system that everyone has to feed into, really, it comes down to just that, Joe, that there's so much that more that should and can be done at the state and local level. The federal government can't legislate all the ills of society away. We've got to have both our parents, our school districts making decisions, our local municipalities and state governments. Some of the local municipalities are looking at things like a GVRO, a gun violence restraining order. You know, what those are good ideas and things that can keep people safe. But those are not things that should be handled at the federal level. They should be handled at the local level.
We talked with Cort Van Asteren about his view on abortion rights. He supports abortion rights. I know that you've been a longtime opponent of abortion rights. You're opposed to abortion, except for the life of the mother. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, I'm absolutely a staunch pro-life advocate, and have supported and will continue to support a lot of pro-life legislation in Congress as we move forward. Now, I've voted for and consistently voted for federal legislation that is incremental. It includes about every piece of legislation, Jason, that I voted for when I took a look back, did include exceptions for rape, incest, and life of the mother. Those are generally the exceptions that are in most of the legislation that is moved forward. You know, I believe that life begins at conception. So, but yet still, I'm a champion in leading the 20-week pain-capable abortion legislation that says a child feels pain at 20 weeks, you can't abort it at 20 weeks or beyond. So sometimes when we're passing legislation, we know we're doing it in an incremental fashion. You know, to me, abortion is heartbreaking, no matter what the circumstances are. You know, I hope and live for a day when not only is it illegal, but that it is unthinkable.
Well, what about women? I know there's been some cases highlighted lately that have had their fetus has had very severe deformities. They're either going to die right after they were born, or they have Down syndrome. I mean, there's different things that women have chosen to terminate their pregnancies for. How would you deal with that, or do you think that is something that should not be allowed?
No, I would certainly not be in favor of what I would call a gendercide or sex selection type
abortions,
obviously it's a very personal decision. It's something that individuals need to make. But I see the value and the humanity and the godliness in every child. And while there can be some tragic and difficult circumstances out there that that moms and dads need to make. To me, rape, incest, and life of the mother are the three exceptions that that I have kind of consistently voted for as we move forward. As I said, I see the value and the worth in every life.
Well, I want to talk about the tax cuts a little bit.
Yes.
I mean, there have been controversies about whether or not the tax cuts have really helped the middle class. I know you were a big supporter of them. Can you talk about that? Also, the minimum wage. I mean, there's going to be a proposed minimum wage hike on the state ballot. There are some in other states. I'm interested in your thoughts on that.
Well, the tax plan went very well and has certainly been a benefit for my district. Not only have the employers been able to increase wages and benefits to my constituents here in the 2nd District and give out bonuses, we've seen those wages rise. But when they go to pay their taxes this April, the average family of four in Missouri will be keeping $3,700 more of their hard-earned money. So I think it has been. I don't think it's crumbs or scraps. I think it has helped. And also, what it's helped to do is to spur economic growth. What people are saying to me is, not only are they saying, "Am I making more money and feel safe and secure in my job?" My kid does. My neighbor does. This person at church feels safer and more secure. I'm happy to go out and spend more of my discretionary dollars on things. We're working to try and make them permanent, and also working on provisions that will offer better retirement savings opportunities for our constituents and those that are working.
So do you think there should be a minimum wage? I mean, this is going to be on the ballot.
I am not in favor of the federal government dictating the minimum wage. I think the market should bear that. Right now, we are seeing people working in the fast food restaurants are being paid $15 an hour. It seems to be the norm. Everyone has lifted their minimum wage. You go to North Dakota, where there's a boom with fracking. If you're a fast food worker in North Dakota, you're getting paid $25 an hour with a $1,000 signing bonus. To me, the market should dictate. And what we've seen is it's working. Wages are rising. Minimum wages are rising. Benefits are increasing. People are being incentivized to try and stay and work, because our biggest problem that I'm hearing from employers is that their workforce needs aren't being met. We're not able to get they're not able to find enough workers. And so we're working on some things through our workforce and education department and agency to try and come up with working with our community colleges, associate degrees, apprenticeships, internships, ways to get young people kind of fed into the system, especially in some of the skilled labor areas, as much as we possibly can.
Final question before our time elapses. There is a feeling this is going to be a more Democratic year than the past two election cycles. Clearly, again, your opponent has more money and organization than your prior opponents. How are you going into this election? How are you feeling the environment is toward Republican candidates like you? And is there any fear that you could be caught beneath the blue wave that a lot of Democrats are hoping for?
Well, I think that the blue wave may be a little blown out of proportion, to be perfectly honest. But I take every election seriously. Anybody who knows my background, we talked a little bit about my growing up here in the 2nd District and the work I've done. But I've also, I chaired the Missouri Republican Party for 7 years, co-chaired the National Party. Any candidate that doesn't earn their vote, any candidate that doesn't stay close to their constituents, that doesn't come home on a weekly basis like I do to spend time meeting and working in their district, is going to lose. They've got to come home. They've got to work hard. They've got to earn the vote. We are getting our message out. We've got the resources to do so. We've been full up on television.
Yeah, in fact, I was going to ask you about that, because the last two previous elections, you didn't have to run ads.
We would not as heavily as this particular ad. We've seen, like I said, these coastal elites are through Act Blue that are not from the state are sending money into all Democrat candidates. We're going to have to get a handle on that process and figure out the legality of the dark money essence of that, because it's very odd, because they can send these low dollars monthly, and you're not sure who they are and who the donor is or where they come from. And they're funding these campaigns in large measure. So you've got to fight back to get your message out. And it's time. I am pleased that the ads that we've run that have talked about the service to my community and my country, that have talked about our veterans, and are now talking about the lives that we're saving through this sex trafficking legislation that we were able to, after six long years, get through both chambers and get a president to sign. And the deterrent effect, the websites it's shutting down, have been significant. So I hope I've earned my constituents' vote. I try to get out and work it hard every day to make sure I do.
Well, one of the new attack ads that Cort Van Oostrom has put up has been faulting the tax cut vote, but saying that it will result in forced cuts to Medicare and Social Security.
That is anything you blatant lie. Blatant lie. And it's not cited anywhere on his website. He just tosses it out there. It's an old scare tactic that the Democrats have used. Remember the old poor old commercials from the early 2000s when they were, you know, throwing granny over the cliff. I have never voted to cut Medicare or Social Security. In fact, President Trump ran on a platform of not touching Social Security or Medicare. So, you know, he can throw dirt at the wall, but that one doesn't stick. Not with me.
We're out of time. Thank you very much, Congresswoman.
My pleasure.
For all of our stories, stlpublicradio.org. Jay Rosenbaum, follow me on Twitter, Joe.
Jay Manis, that's JManNIES.
How can people follow you on Twitter?
At Ann L. Wagner or at Rep. Ann Wagner.
Thank you very much. Until next time, so long.
If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.